Well, the topic, I guess, gauging where to enter into the topic. the topic is solving problems. Or, what was the phrase that Bhakti Tirthaswami used?
Spiritual solution to material problems. According to this, we'll start with this question.
According to chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, what are the problems of life? Really? Are you sure? Anyone else? Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, doshanu, darshanam. Birth, death, disease, and old age is a symptom of knowledge, because Arjuna has asked Krishna to describe six things. Knowledge and the object of knowledge. Purusha and Prakriti. What's the other? Two? Field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. In the item of knowledge, this is one of the items of knowledge. A person who has knowledge knows what the problems are and knows how to solve the problems. But if you don't know what the problems are, is it likely you also, on the other hand, will know the solution to the problems? What's the solution to the problems? What's the root cause? If there's problems cause suffering, what's the root cause of all suffering? Root cause of all suffering. This is question number two. By the time I'm done with my questions, you'll like be the most attentive audience can be. Huh? Yeah. Another way of saying the same thing. Huh? Identification with the body. Attachment to the body. A phrase that Prabhupada used, I'm sure if you did a folio search, you'd find like lots of hits for this one. Because I've heard it many, many times. The root cause of all suffering is ignorance. Ignorance means forgetfulness of Krishna. Knowledge means to know Krishna. There's like, you know what is Brahman. The Brahman is supposed to know what is Brahman. But Brahman indicates Krishna. There's like light. Jyoti indicates the source of light, because you don't have light without a source of light. Brahmana hi pratishtaham. Krishna says that he's the pratishta of Brahman. The one who knows Brahman factually must also know Krishna. And ignorance of Krishna equals suffering. However educated one may be, however clever one may be, however good one may be from a moral standard, ignorance of Krishna is going to bring suffering. So the solution to suffering is to know Krishna, to remember Krishna, instead of forgetting Krishna. The goal of life, a verse that Prabhupada would often quote, Nate vidu svartikatindi vishnum. People in general They don't know. That's ignorance. You don't know. What is the goal of life or the purpose of life? The purpose, not pay, did, do, sva, artha, gatim, he, Vishnu. The real mission of life or purpose of life or sva, artha, one's own purpose of life, is Vishnu. Achieving Vishnu. Ignorance of the purpose of life leads to suffering. Even if one has good intentions. Of course, some people don't have good intentions. But many people have good intentions. There is a phrase, even the path to hell is paved by good intentions. But good intentions, if guided by ignorance instead of knowledge, it's not going to have a good result. It may lead to hell. With good intention. All good intention. So intention is important, but knowledge is essential. Behind knowledge, it should be proper intention also, because you can misuse knowledge. Hiranyakashipu, you read in the beginning of the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when he's performing the funeral ceremony for Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha, his younger brother. He speaks very high, transcendental knowledge. Have you read that section of the Bhagavatam? He's like, you read that section, you think, wow, we should get Bhagavad Gita class. Ranikashi Puvacha. Very clearly he understands the temporary nature of this world, the eternal position of the soul, the circumstantial conditions under which one soul may depart their body, another soul may continue in their body. Rather than repeating this nice presentation, it's a nice presentation. But after all of that, he's got this livid disdain for Vishnu. And he makes this vow, I'm going to get revenge. I'm going to kill Vishnu because he killed my brother. I'm going to get him. It doesn't make sense because he understands Vishnu is the source of that soul that is eternal. How can you kill the soul? You can't kill Vishnu who is the source of the soul. It's like really dumb. For someone who has transcendental knowledge. It's ignorance. And ignorance brings suffering. So the remedy for suffering is knowledge. And so Krishna presents knowledge, transcendental knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. Different stages of transcendental knowledge, leading up to the topmost form of yoga, where even cultivation of knowledge is something that Krishna says. Pratyaja. You can let that one go. And take one thing. That the final fruit of all knowledge, bahunam jamanam ante jnanavan maam prapadyate. Surrender unto Vasudev Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. That's knowledge. And one who has completed that course or path of knowledge surrenders to Krishna, subject to the goal, the release from the suffering due to ignorance is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, because he's the source of everything. when one has that knowledge, one faces problems. The topic is solution to problems. So even when one has knowledge, one confronts circumstances of life that are problematic. We do. Arjun did. Arjun was bewildered about a very perplexing circumstance. What am I to do? And when he submitted to Krishna, please instruct me. Shishya teham shadimam tam kapanam. I surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Stated in a paraphrased way, Krishna's reply is, before we speak about what you're to do to solve this problem, what your duty is, let's talk about who you are. And then we can talk about what you're supposed to do, what your duty is. What's the conception of self? I'm making some visits to some colleges in the month of September. It's a great time to meet students in September because they're like, they're not overwhelmed yet with all the studies, and they're like fresh from all the summer and looking for something. So it's nice time. So the topic I'm going to present, I think, at one of the schools here is, I also have done this already in the earlier part of the semester, I and mind. So start with the I conception. Just as Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita, the I conception. That's the first part of chapter 2. And then the second part of chapter 2 is the my conception. How do I act with the understanding that I am spirit, not this body? Removal of that ignorance of the misconception of who I'm not, and instead understand who I am, at least conceptually. Now, how do you act? Practically speaking, in day-to-day life, with that understanding. Like when a student was yesterday evening at Illinois Institute of Technology said, you know, life is such that even if you have a nice understanding of who you think you are, situations come and demands come and pressure comes and things come, and all of that just like gets lost. Just goes away. How do you stay fixed? Fixed is when there's a connection with the Supreme and you stay fixed. But something that prevents us from staying fixed is not having a clear spiritual conception of who we are, and not having this, having properly processed the my sense. Because mine, that which is mine, is connected to me. That's what mine is. It's mine. And because we commonly think of the body as the self, what's mine is what's in relation to the body. Like work, with our body, with our working senses and knowledge acquiring senses, we do things. And when we do things, something is produced, and that something is produced as mine. The fruits of our work. We are attached to the fruits of our work because we're attached to the conception. Even when we read Bhagavad Gita and say, yes, I'm spirit soul. I haven't read Bhagavad Gita. Surveys say people, Americans, something close to 90% of Americans believe that there's a soul. And that they believe that there's life after this life. The soul isn't just like a combination of matter. It's something that exists beyond this life. At least that's the belief. But you stop and think, how many people are living their life that way? It's a belief that this is disconnected with their life. It's not strong, not sufficient. It's sentiment not connected with proper knowledge and the proper application of that knowledge. So the proper application of that knowledge is the second part of chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna calls it Buddhi Yoga. What does Buddhi mean? Nandasimha. Buddhi. Whoa. Buddhi. What does it mean? Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mama.
Does it have something to do with the mind?
It has something to do with the mind. It's right next door to the mind. Intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is Buddhi. Not, you know, the kind that tells 2 + 2 = 4. But spiritual intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is that intelligence that says, I'm here, I want to go to Krishna. Krishna gives me intelligence how to get to him. That kind of intelligence. Not a GPS, it's another kind of intelligence. How to get to Krishna. And then there's obstacles. And how to overcome obstacles to get to Krishna. That kind of intelligence. That's Buddhi. So how to live your life as a spirit soul that's part of Krishna in the material atmosphere. How to cross that challenge. That's Buddhi. And to explain Buddhi, Krishna makes a contrast by saying, this is like a little lesson in logic. A good definition is both inclusive and exclusive. It says what something is, and it says what something isn't. I remember the first time I heard about a mridanga. So you can describe a mridanga to somebody who doesn't know what a mridanga is. Oh, you're going to India, can you get me a mridanga? I don't know what a mridanga is. What is it? What's a drum? That's what it is. And it's a two-ended drum, but it's not like a tabla where it's like they're side by side, one big end, one small end. They're on the same drum. But it's not those wooden ones, that the dolak, that's like, you know, it's clay. And the ends have this little black thing they call dab. And you hit one, you hit the other, there's a high pitch and low pitch. That's what a mridanga is. One big end, one small end, a drum. So you describe what it is and describe what it isn't. Or maybe one. Somebody bring the back some cartels, it's, you know, it's this, it's not that, so on and so on. Any definition is going to say what something is, but don't exclude some things that it's not. Like Rupa Goswami does this, or Narada does this in their definitions of bhakti. Another quiz question. What's the verse from Nectar of Devotion? Or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that describes what bhakti is. Anyabhidashita shunyam jnanakarma dhyanavritam anukodena krishna nushilanam bhaktir
uttama.
So the definition of bhakti, and the first part is what bhakti isn't, and the second part is what bhakti is. It's exclusive and inclusive. What it's not is the cultivation of karma or jnana. It's a position where there's no desire for such things. Abhilas. Anya abhilas shunyam. Zippo. Specifically, what kind of abhilash, what kind of desires? Jnana and karma. Anavritam. Well, it's not jnana and karma. What is it? Here's what it is. Anukudyena krishna anushilana. Bhaktir. Uttama. Bhakti is pure. It's free from those other contaminating or mixed features. But what it is, it's the cultivation of activities that are pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Following the previous perfected souls. One who does that is performing bhakti. What it is and what it isn't. So, in this text 41, the second part of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna says, I've explained Sankhya, now I'm going to explain Bodhi Yoga. Sankhya is analyzing matter and spirit, and we're over here, we're in the spirit side, we're not the material side. Now, I'm going to explain Bodhi Yoga. And to explain what is Bodhi Yoga, he contrasts what it is, what it isn't. It's a common, like those that know a little bit about education, compare and contrast is called. To help a teacher, to help a student understand the subject, compare and contrast. Standard teaching technology. Here's what it is, and here's what it isn't. Compare and contrast. So Bodhi Yoga, Krishna explains, is where one is resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. And in contrast, it's not, so those that don't have this Bodhi, then they're the intelligence of those who are irresolute is bahushaka, many-branched. So, here's person A and person B, and they've got a problem. And they want a solution to the problem. The solution to the problem of person B is irresolute in purpose. I know I want to enjoy, and I don't like to suffer. The problem is the suffering, and I want enjoyment. So that many-branched intelligence is very common. I have this, like we just had, like the Labor Day weekend. So people plan their Labor Day weekend so they can enjoy it. And they use many-branched intelligence to figure it out. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go through these people, and I'm going to do those things, and eat those things, and do. Put it all together, and it's happiness. And as they're going along, they're constantly refining that experience because it's not producing happiness. And at the end, it's like, it didn't happen. Of course, it never did, and it never will. If there's some sensations, yehi some sparsha jab bhoga, dukha yonaya evate, even where that you bring the senses in contact with sense objects expecting happiness, and you always get something else. I don't think we have these toys in India. Maybe we don't even have them in America anymore, but when I was small, one of the toys that I had was a jack-in-the-box. You heard that? Like, that's a, now it's like an eating place, jack-in-the-box. But it's jack-in-the-box is, you, there's this like little metal box, and you press the thing a certain place, and jack-in-the-box comes out. It's like creaky looking thing. Makes some noise. And then you press it down, you press the lid down, and it goes away. And then you press the button. And the same thing happens over and over again, and little kid just does it again and again and again. And material life is a jack-in-the-box. It's just, you know, there's some kind of happiness when that thing comes out and goes, you know, like you got fooled. You're expecting happiness and you got misery. Making some sparsha job, bhoga, dukkha. Let me do it again, see if I get a different result. Press the button, you get dukkha again. So then you like, you know, maybe turn it this way, or turn it that way, or try it painted a different color or something. It always comes up. Dukkha. By design, that's the kind of place it is. That's the place. And the creator describes the place. That's the place. And people keep trying. That's ignorance. One of Einstein's sayings is, it's a picture of ignorance, that if you continue doing the same thing the same way, you expect a different result. So we have to do, even if we can do the same thing, we have to do them in a different way. but it's not just a matter of making some adjustments of doing it this way, doing it that way. That's approaching life in a fundamentally different basis. The fundamentally different basis is grounded in a spiritual conception and then acting accordingly. And proper guidance and detachment, knowledge and detachment, jnana and vairagya. That couplet is throughout all of the Vedas. You're not going to get a different result in avidya. You need vidya. You need knowledge. Properly applied. With detachment. So I'm going to read a little bit from the purport of this nice verse, 241, and it gives a solution to the problems. The problems of life, or the problem called life. It's not like suicide. The solution is spiritual education and training and applying that. But applying that in such a way, in such a manner, that there's no possibility of the jack-in-the-box program repeating itself over and over and over. The first sentence of the purport Prabhupada introduces something that's very important, the concept of faith, because knowledge in which we don't have faith, we're not going to apply it, so you have to have faith combined with proper knowledge so that you apply it. A strong faith that, by Krishna consciousness, one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called vyavasayatmika, intelligence. That's the starting part of the paragraph, part of the purport. Faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligations to family traditions, humanity, and nationality. Fruitive activities are the engagements of one's reactions from past good or bad deeds. If one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, all activities are on the absolute plane, for they are no longer subject to dualities like good and bad. Now listen to this next sentence. I'm going to stop halfway through and see if you can fill in the blank. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is, fill in the blank, attaining love of God, right? Something like that. Achieving unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Going back to Godhead. Something like that, right? You know what it said? Yeah, renunciation of the material conception of life. Read again. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. That sounds like ABC. Like, you know, we want composition and, you know, something elevated. But you're not going to get elevated. One will not become elevated as long as there's attachment to the material conception of life. Because with that comes the expectation of happiness. that matches your notion of what happiness is supposed to be. The math is wrong. Like Prabhupada's example, if there's a long mathematical calculation and you make a mistake right at the very beginning, you're going to get the wrong answer. You can't just like adjust things. You have to go right back to where the mistake was. And then the rest of the calculations, you get the right answer. Maybe some of you with your families, particularly with your children, you've had some meetings from Purna Pragya's writings. He's Purna Pragya is a Prabhupada disciple who has done a summary of Mahabharata and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam. It's like really simple. The essences are there and it's like short. Make it easy to go through. Purna Pragya. He's a very scholarly devotee. Purna Pragya, his wife is Narayani. Maybe some of you know Narayani. She's like a super teacher. Super, super teacher. She's taught at the BAG and taught so many things. She's been traveling a bit in America of late. Very, very capable husband and wife. They... In the summer of 1970, I moved into the Boston Temple 1 month before they moved into the Boston Temple. So I'd known them for like 40 plus years. But after I joined in the Boston Temple, at the end of the summer, I was shifted to the New York Temple. And they stayed in the Boston Temple. So our association was limited for that summer. And then circumstances happened and they went to India. She was the head pujari in the Calcutta temples, worshipping Radha Govinda at the Calcutta temple for years. And then later they lived in the Mayapur, later they lived in Vrindavan, she taught in the BIG, and he was writing books. So I saw Purna Pragya in Mayapur, this last GBC meeting. We're walking on the veranda of the Lotus building and I saw him in the distance and I went right up to him and said, "Hi, Paul." And he said, "Do you remember me? It's been like, 30 something years." I said, "Yeah." And you're Purna Pragya. We joined Hare Krishna Temple around the same time. Nice to see you. How's it going? And you've written so many books over the years. He was like, very scholarly. And he said, "Well, I'll tell you, what I'm doing lately is I was just in Singapore and I was teaching a seminar on Yunatha's body. And after all, I was writing and writing and writing. He said, I'm convinced. I have a whole system of several parts. And if I could have a new devotee audience and I could take them through this, they'd be fixed in Krishna consciousness. This is like after all these Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita summaries, he wants to teach you not this body. And then apply it. What happens if you don't? What happens if you do? It's in step by step, a seminar. Fantastic. How important it is. Because ABC is something that's not just like, you give the answer in your Bhakti Shastri exam and you get an A. But you live your life that way. That's Bodhi Yoga. Then I'm going to read the last paragraph of this Bodhi Yoga, the Avasayatnika Bodhi explanation. A little bit. By satisfaction to Prabhupada is saying that the secret to success of getting this is through service to the spiritual master. He quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasadam, yasya prasada nagati katopi. by satisfaction of the spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes satisfied, and the converse is true. Last paragraph. The whole process, bhuti, applying spiritual conception to the laboratory of life, the whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body. Dash. Not theoretically, but practically. Where there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. That's the mind. I. So clear, so strong, so fixed, that there isn't even wiggle room for going into becoming attached to mine, the fruits of my work. This tendency for fruitive, getting something, achieving something, doing something, passion, inspires fruitive work, attachment. And that leads to kamesha, krodesha, rajoguna samudbhava, suffering, being covered. The good intention is dissipated, it's lost, because we don't carry the right conception into what we're doing. So it's to be so strong that without that, you're not going to enter into the internal potency nicely. You'll be struggling with the external potency. Daivideyeshu gunamaya mamamaya durakyada. And then, so the surrender is when it hurts. And then when the hurt subsides, business as usual. No. Sankalpa vikalpa. Accepting, rejecting. Riding on the chariot of the mind. Being an unsteady bhakta, inspired by circumstances and running from suffering. And Krishna consciousness is meant to go beyond that. The Bhagavad Gita is meant to take us beyond that. It takes letting go of the bodily conception of life. And if you let go of the bodily conception of life, where do you go? What do you take shelter of? It's necessary to act on the spiritual conception while we're engaged in devotional service. That's Buddha Yoga. That's where your aim is one, and you're resolute in purpose. I just had this conversation with somebody, like, really late last night, because they're in India right now. And very tearful, because they're experiencing enormous grief. That, you know, there's impurities, and the impurities are it's blocking their relationships, and so on and so on and so on. They're progressing Krishna consciousness, and they're nice devotees, very strong devotees. Maybe some of you read Ravindra Swarup Prabhu's Vyasa Puja offering. Anybody read it from the Vyasa Puja book? I invite you to read it. It's like, he's a great writer. Whatever he writes is worth reading. But it's specific on this point that I'm addressing, which is, he describes some years ago, he decided chanting of the holy name. As I said in the presentation, I would speak something about chanting of the holy name in relation to solving problems. So he thought, because he's very intelligent, our process, the main means of deliverance in this age is the chanting of the holy name. So let me find myself, like, very conscientiously to chanting. And one of the keys to conscientiously chanting is, whenever the mind wanders, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. Wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. So he describes in this Vyasa Puja offering, that's what I did. And I found that my mind kept wandering, even however many times I brought it back. And it wasn't even so much like the mind was attracted to something, just the mind was wandering. And then I kept bringing it back, and then I realized behind the mind wandering, there's something that's making it wander. And it's not just attraction to something, it's aversion to something. Because aversion is the flip side of attachment, and attachment is the flip side of aversion. And then his realization was he's averse to Krishna's name. You bring the mind to Krishna's name and the mind becomes restless. Because there's some aversion to Krishna. Then he stayed with that for a while, and it was shocking. It was painful. And then he described that all of a sudden, a volcanic eruption came gushing out, this thing of grief, of his, very heavy feelings about Krishna. And wouldn't stop. And he felt terrible. I'm not a devotee, I'm a demon, and it's an awful person. And it kept coming, and it kept coming, and it kept coming, and waters of devastation. Markandeya Rishi, floating in the waters of devastation, somehow surviving, but it was devastating. And then his thoughts went to Prabhupada. Beautiful offering. Please read it. It's online, krishna.com, and you can find it. Vyasa Puja. Electronic. Online. And Prabhupada gave him the process of chanting, which could uncork this pressured thing underneath the surface. Because if you just don't do that, it doesn't go away. It's like a boil. It's not just lancing the boil, because the problem is there's infection in the blood. So if it doesn't come here, it's going to come there or somewhere, because it's infected. The problem is there's infection. So the infection, the disease, the ignorance is ignorance of Krishna, or a disposition toward Krishna that's negative, an attitude toward Krishna. That's what brings us into the material world, and that's what causes our sufferings. So, by thinking of the mercy that Prabhupada had bestowed upon him and others like him, and thinking this, meditating on this personality, this very benevolent personality, the grief subsided. It's the resolution by the mercy of, just as Prabhupada is writing in his 241 purport, by the mercy of the spiritual master, one can get on the other side of that relationship with Krishna issue that we have, by helping us understand how wonderful is Krishna and relieving us of our misgivings. I'll share one other related to the verse, related to this topic of chanting. I was at a Java retreat in June in Seattle, or somewhere between Seattle and Portland. Did you go to the Portland Java retreat? Seattle, it's in Olympia. Yeah, that state park there. So last year, this June, one of the devotees, I won't mention the name, came up just before the 64 round day and said, I want to share something. When I'm chanting, as my chanting gets a little better, I'm more attentive and less drifty, more attentive, something happens, something inside, and they feel a resistance toward Krishna. What's that? Because I know I'm not going to advance because further until that gets resolved. What is it? What should I do? And so, you said before the 64 round day, so I didn't get into a lengthy discussion, but we discussed it later. And it's the same issue. It's an attitude towards Krishna problem. It's what brings us into the material world. Say, what brings us to the material world? Misuse of free will. Or in the language of Bhagavad Gita, Raga Dvesha Samuthena Dvandva Mohina Bharata. Raga, attraction. Dvesha, repulsion. Attraction for the position of being Purusha, the enjoyer. I want to enjoy. Independently of Krishna, of course. So that's Dvesha. He who is actually Purusha, I've got an attitude. Because I want to be the enjoyer. And therefore we come to the material world. Somebody asked that at IET last night, you know, why does this place exist? Why is there a world that we live in and we struggle with to begin with? Because we wanted it. We wanted independent enjoyment. And Krishna said, you can't. And we did, you know, what kids do sometimes.
I want it.
You can't.
I want it.
All right. Prabhupada gives this example. A little child sees the moon. Mommy, I want the moon. You can't have the moon. Mommy, you know how it goes. Just say it over and over again enough times that, you know, even when you can't have it, you get it.
I want the moon. Mommy, I want the moon.
All right. Here's a mirror. Hold the mirror like this. See, there's the moon. It's moon's in your hand. Just tilt the mirror a little bit and the moon goes away. Because it's not the real thing. It's the reflection of the real thing. And that's this material world. That's the happiness that we're seeking. There's no substance here. And the expect, when you have an expectation for happiness and it's not met, what happens? You're frustrated. Kamesha, Krodesha. And we carry that same spirit with us into the realm of devotional service, and we're expecting the fulfillment of our whatever our idea of happiness is. And if it doesn't happen, we're frustrated. Because it's, you know, the principle is the wrong principle. We're not meant to be the enjoyer. Krishna is meant to be the enjoyer, and spiritual life is to, like, do a paradigm shift. Krishna is the enjoyer, and we're the servant. And how he wants things to go, just let me serve. You can do with me as you like. Like what you find is Shikshastakam, right? You can embrace me. You can neglect me. You can trample me under feet. You can do with me whatever you like. Just one thing. Please engage me in your service. Please engage me in your service. Please allow me to be in this Buddha Yoga position where I'm just acting as your servant. And you can give me the intelligence how to serve you best. How to come to you as you like. But I wish to not budge one inch from this position of being your servant. at least the mood of service is preliminary to getting out of the mature condition of life with a proper spiritual conception. And that's the solution. In whatever the problems are that you face and you'd like a solution, be sure that you bring devotion to Krishna with you into that situation. And even if you don't know exactly what to do, you feel protection and shelter from the circumstance. Krishna's with you. The unflinching trust in something sublime, as Prabhupada is speaking about what faith is. And as you spiritually progress, the specifics of how to address different situations become more complete. You have a better understanding, more mature understanding of how to apply yourself. But it's not just that the circumstance needs to go away and then I can be happy again. It's the resolute purpose of pleasing Krishna. May that not waver one moment. And then there's contentment. There's shelter in any circumstance of life. There's some thoughts to share with you this evening on solutions. Ultimate solutions. Any discussion? Comments? Anyone?
Krishna Maharaj, I have two questions. The first one is, as we know that higher than the mind is the intelligence.
Mm.
Intellectually, we know that Krishna is the supreme. We know that we shouldn't be attached. But if the mind is lower than the intelligence, why is still attached to the material things?
What's driving two things? What's driving both the mind and the intelligence? If it's the mode of passion, then although theoretically I can accept certain things, I'm spirit soul, I'm eternal, I'm meant for service to Krishna, intelligence is meant to be applied to pursue that. If the mode of passion is very strong, then it very quickly transforms into, that gets lost or washed over in favor of how can I be an enjoyer of the circumstance? And then the mind is unsteady and the mind begins to contemplate enjoyment and intelligence is lost. Then intelligence becomes subordinate to the mind. The mind says, I want to enjoy, and the intelligence's job is to figure out how to get it. It's too much conditioning or being under the influence of another passion. Who is it? Even in the arena of devotional undertakings, devotional service, trying, striving devotional service. Being trying to be the enjoyer and controller of our activity. Instead of Krishna being the enjoyer and the controller.
Okay. Next question is, while you were sharing Revenue Swarup Prabhu's his offering to Srila Prabhupada, you mentioned that that Prabhu was going through, like, while chanting, he came to a stage where he understood that he actually got the aversion, which means now what we are doing, we think is attraction towards Krishna, but we don't get to understand the actual aversion till we really focus and be attentive in the
practice. Yes. Conceptually we can understand, but experientially it's like, casual. there's something deeper. If the level of acknowledgement is, sure, I understand some aversion, but no, I'm okay because I'm like going back to Krishna. It hasn't resolved that aversion. It's primordial. It's still driving the machine. And it's driving the notion that says, I'm an independent enjoyer. At least there's opportunity out there. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to be the independent enjoyer. In the name of, I'm doing it for Krishna. It's a very deep ignorance. It's why we suffer. Why we get bodies, why we identify with the body, why we get a mind, why we identify with the mind. Even though we know that all of this is transient and temporary and illusory, we identify with it. Because those are instruments that are provided for the conditioned soul to try to be the enjoyer. Independently. And we're stubbornly attached to that. And behind that stubborn attachment is this aversion. Raga dvesha samutena mandamohi nibharata. That's a program. Very strong program. Deeply embedded. Fruitive tendency is like, I think of it like a stain. It's like a commercial. You know, how do you get rid of the stain? You take this powerful detergent and scrub and rub and bleach it, and still there's a stain. Do it again and do it again. It's still there. Very deep. You can't just like throw it away and get another, a new one. It's on the platform of the soul. The soul's got an attitude toward it. He was actually the Purusha, and I want to be the Purusha. I'm a competitor. He's the competition. It's very deep. Meet it. So what do we do? Continue to follow that which is the recommended remedy given in the scripture, and you continue to follow that with faith and more sincerely and eagerly seek mercy, because our own effort is not going to work. Effort must be made. Mercy is definitely required. So in advanced or advancing stages, dependent upon mercy, while increasing endeavor, ever increasing dependence upon mercy, and then you feel protected. You feel safe. That's the deep conviction, the resolute determination that's being spoken of in this third point. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I said that the reason we developed the aversion and the disdain, Prabhu, is because we forgot Krishna, and that's why we fall into earth. To rediscover that, you know, that we, our love was not perfect. At some point we forgot Krishna somewhere. And that is why we have to get through Maya, work through this, to get rid of the aversion and realize how much we really love him. So.
Sounds like we're saying the same thing. But, it's not so easy. It's not like, okay, I forgot Krishna, now I just remember Krishna. Just remember Krishna. But something happens, it's like slips through our fingers. We find ourselves again forgetting Krishna. And that's because there's this fundamental aversion. I don't want to. or Kamsa. It was very Krishna conscious, but it wasn't favorable. So how to want Krishna to be the object of pleasure, one who should be the recipient of pleasure, instead of that Krishna be the object of pleasure. My purpose of existence is for Krishna's pleasure. Whatever that is, that's my purpose of existence. That's so that we have to let go of this aversion to get there. It's a transformation, total transformation. Our most effective means for that is the chanting of the holy name. That's our means of deliverance. So how we chant the holy name is the key to flipping it around, getting free from that aversion. And instead, dedication to Krishna should be the enjoyer. Someone else? Yes.
Thank you, Shri Maharaj. May I also ask two questions?
Sure.
I was wondering what Srila Prabhupada meant by sublime.
By?
Sublime.
What did Prabhupada mean by sublime? It's the natural condition of the soul. That's what he meant. In relation to Krishna, when the soul is situated in that relationship, ananda, like complete fulfillment. So much so that nothing else is attractive but that one something. That's the one.
And then I was also wondering, it seems as though Prabhupada, his program didn't ask of us to be so repentant. He didn't focus on that, the envy that we had so much, and didn't create the feelings of guilt.
Repentant doesn't mean feelings of guilt. Repentant means like you recognize that, you know, like I was traveling with somebody who were following the GPS. And, you know, the lady was very nicely yelling at us saying, you know, you made the wrong turn. Recalculating. So, repentance means, you know, I made the wrong turn. And then he was like, recalculating and get back on track again. It's not like the guilt. We were in a conversation and he was hearing and he was looking, but he was paying more attention to the conversation, so he missed the turn. It's not guilt. Just recalculating. Now please this time turn right. Okay. Back on track. Guilt is good for persons in the mode of ignorance. But because that's not like, at least initially we get them to do something. You know, that guilt thing, they stop doing that something. The motivation by guilt is not enduring. Not endearing either. But they get somebody to do something or stop doing something hurtful. Guilt is not sustaining. You have something?
Thank you, Maharaj. I had a question about the story from Bhagavatam you were pointing at from the about here. I mean, how Hiranyakashipu knew, he was aware of the spiritual knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that if knowledge is light, so he didn't have ignorance. So still, what was he lacking?
He had an attitude, a big time attitude toward Vishnu. That's what he was lacking. Like Kamsa. He had a big time attitude toward Krishna.
So that means
Jarasandha, the same thing. Jarasandha was like, you know, he was an asura, but asuras also do punya. His punya was he gave incredibly charity to the brahmanas, and how much that's wanted and lauded and Vedic literature. The Krishna knew that, and that's on that basis, let's go as brahmanas. And then we'll ask him for charity, and he'll give it. We'll ask to fight him. He was very charitable. He was also, you know, highly educated. Ravana, vastly educated. But what was the problem? What was the thing that was missing was the regard for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the attitude problem. Jaisha, big time.
So even after having this kind of knowledge, I might still have Hiranyakashipu in my heart.
Well, you know, we have little Hiranyakashipu-like tendencies. We have aversion tendencies to some degree or another. We all have it. Unless we're situated in unalloyed devotional service, we have it to some degree. Greater, lesser, if it's to some degree. It's like an infection. When there's a nice description in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Sanatana Goswami is going on the path of renunciation, he meets his relative gives him this nice chadar, and he comes before Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya is looking at the chadar. He didn't say anything, but Sanatana Goswami can understand, he doesn't approve. So he gave it away. You know the story. Went to the river, said, this mendicant had his old quilt. May I have your old quilt and I'll give you my chadar? He said, stop teasing me. This isn't nice. You're an elevated person. This isn't nice. Don't. No, I need it. Please accept and let me have your quilt. Okay. So when he came back, what did you tell me? Was very pleased. He said, when a physician is curing a disease, he doesn't just get the disease so it's like not prevailing anymore, but completely gone. That's a good physician. So, similarly, with renunciation, you're on the path of renunciation, but go the whole way. You're going to live that life of a mendicant and do it all the way. So, to some degree, that's in our heart. To some degree, it's less than it was before. But to some degree, it's still in our heart. And it's blocking us from our transposition. And we need to recognize that it's there. Not become obsessed by it or not be guilty about it, but recognize that it's there and take up the means to remove it. Yeah.
Maharaj, we have always heard that because we wanted to, Krishna allowed us to come here to this material world.
And similarly, if we want to,
yeah. My question was basically, when was it just we wish that Krishna did this, but he didn't try to convince us?
Of course he did. And he's still doing it. And we're stubborn.
He's a master of all knowledge.
He argued. You know. And then we know. I don't want to enjoy. You know how it goes. So, all right. It's against my better wishes, but all right. He doesn't interfere. He prompts, he instructs, he guides, but free will is there.
I think not able to take it yet. He let us go so easily.
Well, you know, it wasn't easy. Ha, 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 ha even right now.
Yeah.
Isn't that just like sometime in a distant past? Right now. How come Krishna's not like, how come Krishna's not just like jerking our chain and come over here? Surrender to me. Oh, Dasha. He doesn't do that. He's doing lots of things to get us to come to him, and we're like dilly-dallying and twiddling our thumbs and turning our attention the other way.
When we try to do sadhana, to come, go back to Krishna, then why is that we have so many thoughts? If we are going to Krishna,
it's the residual effect of our past misdeeds. Krishna has greatly reduced it, but we have strong residual tendencies. Krishna personally removed that residual tendency. When he sees Tesham Chatati Yoktana, when he sees that our sincere, sustained desire that we really want to be in his association, then he removes. I just sent out today Baladev Vidhi Bhusan's commentary on that verse. Krishna personally intercedes in that situation. The devotee doesn't need to do anything. Krishna takes care of it. And what we need to do is be devoted. But we don't need to do anything special other than that. Just be in our relationship with Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna attentively. The process is quite simple. Let's give the microphone to someone else. Anyone else? This gentleman, you have something bubbling there. Something? Yeah. You want to say something?
Yeah, what's the average? How much does a soul survive? How much does a soul survive in average?
I don't understand.
Yes. How much does a soul survive after the death?
Oh, the soul survives eternally. Because souls don't come into being, and souls don't go out of being. Death doesn't mean the end of the soul. Birth doesn't mean the beginning of the soul. The soul is eternal. So where the soul will go depends upon the consciousness that has developed in the course of life. That's going to determine where the soul will go. Vargvam gacchanti sattvasta madye tishtanti rajasa adho gacchanti kamasa. Depending upon the consciousness, the mode of nature with which that soul has associated during its life. Last question.
My question is regarding our tendency to be dangerous. And one of the things I have a difficulty understanding is like, how do we keep this conception of like tuning into one own self and looking into one's own inclinations and likings? And doing those things and in service to Krishna. Sometimes I don't feel internally convinced, like there's a confusion that is it something I'm doing it because I like to do it, but is it...
Generally there's a mix. Until you're in pure devotion, it's a mix. But so it's not detrimental to do things that you like to do, provided you try to do them for Krishna. It's a dovetail. You connect this with that. That's fine. Now, there may be a stage where you do things. You do things that you don't like to do, because you know that Krishna likes them, and that's why you do them. Or don't do them. But until that stage comes, it's a dovetail program. It's all right. If we're doing things that are of our nature, working on the consciousness behind those things that are born of our nature. And as time passes, even something may not appear to be your nature. If it seems to be needed, then you can do that too. Because the consciousness behind it is what's driving it. Because it's for Krishna. Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam.